Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Live with MJ, where I have the distinct pleasure to interview some of the greatest names in sports, entertainment, philanthropy, and corporate America. For those of you who are first-time listeners, my name is MJ Padone. I am the president and founder of Interpublic Relations, and I am joined today by my co-host, Gina Mason. Hello, Gina.
Hi, MJ. How are you?
Oh, I'm great. We have an exciting guest by the name of Mr. Cabot Marks waiting for us.
Hey, MJ. Hi, Gina.
Hi, Cabot.
Hi, Cabot. So just, Cabot, before we go, I want to give a little introduction and let our listeners know that you're a very successful entertainment attorney and sports attorney. And the name of your firm is CJ Marks Law here in New York City. And you have worked with many great sports legends. You're the husband to Patty Marks and the father of two beautiful girls and also a very active philanthropist. Cabot, thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. Hope you guys are also.
Great. Thank you for joining us. So let's get down to the basics.
Okay.
So tell us, when did you decide that you wanted to become an attorney?
I decided I wanted to become an attorney at a relatively early age. I don't know, probably less than 10. Although I'm not really sure that I ever necessarily thought I'd be practicing law. It just seemed like a good way to stay in school a little longer, even at an early age, and get a degree that you could use for many different things. So I wasn't sure what I wanted to do exactly, but I knew that I wanted to keep my options open.
Did your parents have any influence there? I know from many Jewish families, there's a lot of parents that are attorneys or doctors, and they typically would like their children to follow suit.
Neither one of my parents were attorneys, so I got no pressure in that area. They didn't know why I wanted to be an attorney actually so early. It just seemed like arguing and making myself known and my positions known came at a relatively early age.
Well, there you go. Were you good with arguing with children at that age?
reasonably good. Yeah. That it just seemed like I wouldn't be. I didn't want to take somebody else's opinion or somebody else's statements as facts. So I would always be arguing with them or making sure that my voice was heard.
There you go. That makes sense. So why did you choose entertainment? Did you know from the age of 10 that you would?
I've always been
go in that direction.
You know, it's kind of funny because I knew that I always wanted to do something in sports, and I don't know if it was actually the age of 10, but probably not much later than that, I realized that my pro career as a baseball player was not going to come to pass. not quite being 6 feet or being well under 6 feet. Basketball was also out, and as much as there was no prohibition on playing football, it wasn't. Didn't seem like that was in the cards either. So it was, since I had a very early started love of sports, if I was going to continue in that area, it would have to be a different venue. So the law was somewhat of a natural.
Okay, that makes good sense. So now that you're representing a lot of high-profile celebrities and especially athletes, do you have any funny stories that you can share?
Well, the funniest
ones, without mentioning names, of course.
Yeah, the funniest ones, of course, I can't share with you. But let's really just being around the players and hearing their stories is just amazing. I mean, most of what you see on the field, the chemistry, it's from being on the road and being with the same group of players, the camaraderie, and also you find the teams that that win have that chemistry, and it's hard to necessarily put your finger on it, but there is a chemistry as well as you know, when you hear of teams that aren't winning, it's usually for sort of the same thing. Talent is only part of the equation, because once you get to that level of being a pro athlete, it's definitely you're all extremely talented. I mean, there are your superstars, but the rest of the players are somewhat evenly skilled, and a lot of it's chemistry and trust and being able to live in the moment and perform under pressure.
Now, I said funny stories and you didn't give us any, so I'm going to dig a little bit deeper because I know you and I could probably write a really good book together.
But I haven't written that book yet now, have I?
No, I know, and neither have I, but there has to be one. I mean, I know there are listeners out there that want to hear a little something out of you.
Nothing disrespectful to anybody.
You
don't even have to say the sport. Don't even say the sport. Just say an athlete.
Well, I was doing an appearance with a few athletes, and this was probably going on about 20 years ago, and there was a blizzard, and we got snowed in Atlantic City, and big storm, but yeah, 40 inches or
more.
Not a
bad place to get snowed in.
you would think it wouldn't be a bad place to get snowed in, but that's actually just the opposite, because one by one, anybody who could escape who was working there left, and the food ran kind of low, and the staff ran kind of low. The only thing that they would keep open was the off-track betting and the gambling tables. So we were there as representation for a number of athletes, and most of them would mind their own business and go about their stuff. But a couple of them got very enamored with the tables, and in particular the horse races. And we had set up some corporate appearances and some other things for the weekend. And one gentleman in particular went through his money, which does happen. But then when he couldn't pay his bill, he faked a heart attack, and they let him stay in his room for a couple of days. When we finally got out of there, it was literally about 4 or 5 days later, when the streets had been cleared, and I had to fly down to Houston right after the event. Lo and behold, I land in Houston, and this player who had allegedly suffered a heart attack a couple of days earlier meets me at the airport in Houston from Atlantic City. Somehow he got there looking for money so that he could pay everybody and pay for his flight when he had to get back home. So, Something's always an interesting situation.
I have to share a little funny story because mine's a little juicier than yours. But I will never forget. You have to hold back more than I do. But we had a player who was running late for an appearance, and my partner at the time didn't want to go upstairs and get him up or go see what's happening. And needless to say, I had to be the one to go upstairs. If you could use your imagination, he wasn't by himself. So the girl at first thought I was a girlfriend or something coming up there, and that didn't go over big. But anyway, he was a little bit hungover and had a late night. So that just, I look back on some of these stories that will be part of the book someday, of course, anonymously, but...
You gotta change the names, right?
Of course. A lot of John Smith and Junior John Smith. So can you share, I'm sure you're asked this quite often, any advice for the younger generation who is trying to break into sports entertainment? Do you have any advice that you would share with them?
It's not don't do it. It's really, because it's a great field. It's a great industry. Huge opportunity, huge exposure and opportunities. But I would want to make sure that people realize, because we do get a lot of requests for interns or people looking for jobs. It's a relatively small market, and there are literally thousands of people looking for positions in there. So I would say, one, obviously, do what you can do with regard to education and keeping your grades up, take opportunities, volunteer, especially if you're given the opportunity, if you can be an intern, paid or unpaid, get into the industry no matter what you're doing. Charities are a good way to get in because they do a lot of events, a lot of sports events, a lot of athletes are involved in sports. They have their own foundation. If you can assist them, again, not necessarily for money, but if you can get the exposure, It's a great way to break in. I mean, everybody wants to be general manager of the Yankees, myself included. But at the same time, you know, that's only one job in a big industry.
Right.
You know, keep on plugging and don't get discouraged. But I did it through law school. Other people do it through through PR or advertising or internet. That's really been a new explosion. You can blog or set up your own. From when I broke into the industry, things have changed. I mean, you can be blogging now and get the word out there through social media. You can be a writer. I mean, there's so many different avenues now. It's not just are you working with a sports team or are you an agent representing athletes. It's actually opened up tremendously, and even, you know, things that will be created in the future. So you can pretty much, you know, find a niche, find something that you love, and just stick with that. Whether you think you're getting traction or not, I would stay with that.
That is certainly stellar advice. And, of course, I have to talk about my favorite topic, which is philanthropy. And I know you're always giving back to a number of great causes, and you're incredibly philanthropic. Can you tell us about some of your favorite organizations and why?
Okay. We deal with a lot of different organizations, and with athletes, a lot of them have their own foundations, their own causes, which we always support. In any of the projects that we're doing, we always want there to be some sort of charitable component. On a personal level, one of the charities that I support is Smile Train, which works with children and cleft palates, and the fantastic organization changing the lives of a lot of children. We do a lot of work with the with autism charities, a lot of work with cancer charities. Family and people that we've known have been affected by those diseases. And just in general, I also work my alma mater, the University of Michigan, with their scholarship foundations and helping people go to school who might not otherwise be able to afford it. But just in general, I mean, I think that athletes and when you're dealing with an industry that has so much money, there are so many ways that you can give back, and there are so many great causes. And for example, the Smile Train. The reason I got involved with them is their doctors are doing surgeries that literally cost $250 or $500. So you can change a child's entire outlook on life and their life in general for as little as $250, $300. And that was I just found that remarkable that such a small amount could literally change someone's life, long term. A lot of the organizations that you give to cancer organizations, which do tremendous research, but your $300 is just part of the battle. But here you have a situation where these doctors in part donating their time, but for $300 you can change someone's life, and that's really a good feeling.
No, absolutely, that's great. And I also tell a lot of people that sometimes I hear them say, I don't have the money this month to write a check. And so in these organizations, even if people just lend their time, it could even be helping with back office work, could just be assisting at an event. There's so much and so many ways for people to get involved. But I certainly love that you just spoke about Smile Train, because I know a number of people who help that cause as well, and they all, basically say the same thing. So that's great.
There's always, if it's not money, it's time. You had mentioned before about breaking into the sports business. I broke into it, frankly, by working with some charities, doing work for and with athletes to help raise money for some causes. I think the first one I did was with muscular dystrophy back about way too many years ago. You were probably still in school, and it was very worthwhile in that we met some of the people who were the money was going to and their families, but also it gave me exposure. So it was helping me both on the level of working to help them, but we were raising money, but it also exposed me to an industry that I had wanted to break into and that I had been studying for and looking for opportunities. And by me giving back and volunteering my time and helping, in this case, work with the people from MDA, it also gave me exposure to the world of sports and entertainment. And I will tell you a funny story. And again, I apologize for not using any names, but the first first sports event that I did was with a well-known baseball player who's in the Hall of Fame. And there was a very ritzy golf tournament that was going on, and beautiful golf course up in Westchester. And my job was to make sure that the players who had had a very long evening the night before, or had a late morning or whatever you want to call it, they had to make it out to the tee time to get out there and take pictures with the participants and get the event kicked off. Well, this one gentleman who, as I said, was a baseball Hall of Famer, was in the locker room. And I hear him calling out to me, and he's like, kid, can you tell me, you know, what time do I have to go out there? And I'm like, I was in the middle of something. I had my hands full. And I had a bunch of shirts. We were running around to the participants for the event, handing out the shirts and the gift bags for the golf tournament. And I'm like, I think you're supposed to be out there now. He goes, and he continues the conversation, asking me questions. And so finally I spin around, and I notice that this gentleman is completely naked. And he insists on having this conversation with me for about 5 or 10 minutes, asking me how he should, you know, where he should go, who he was going to be playing with, what company they were from. And I'm spending, you know, 3 or 4 minutes trying to look over this guy's head or at least stare into his face, while he's, of course, used to walking around a locker room and being in a locker room. And this is the first time, my first event with athletes, and I see a gentleman of his notoriety talking to me buck naked. It was startling, to say the least, but a funny story nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Very funny. All right, so now we're on the topic of sports anyway. Let's talk about, you know, Tuesday they have the big announcement of the Hall of Fame class. What did you think about that, and then the inductees?
Interesting selections. Randy Johnson, Pedro, Smoltz, fantastic pitchers, all-time legendary pitchers, each with their own story. Pedro, a shorter career than the other two, you know, brilliant, just a fantastic pitcher. Got injured, didn't have the longevity. You got Randy Johnson, 6'10", amazing pitcher over a long period of time. Smoltz had Tommy John surgery, came back from it. 50 saves in a year, Cy Young awards, reliever, starter. Only the second player to split their time really between being an all-star reliever as well as an all-star starter, following Dennis Eckersley. Can't argue with any of those three. I thought they were all fantastic. Craig Biggio, I'm a big fan of, and a local guy here in the New York area. Fantastic player. I think it's great that he got in. But then you look at him compared to some of the other players who didn't get in. New York Met, Piazza, Biggio's teammate, Bagwell, a favorite of mine, Timmy Raines, who I thought was just an electrifying player, and I don't think gets the credit he deserves. They were, I think, the next three or four players who were on the ballot. And I'm not sure that, again, their time may all come, and I think they're all deserving of getting in. But, you never know how the writers are, or you don't like to guess how the writers are selecting who will get in. Not at all. Again, I was a big fan of Craig Biggio's, and I think it's wonderful that he got in. It's just Bagwell was always his teammate, and it seemed like they were inseparable, except that one made the Hall this year and the other one didn't. And in my opinion, Piazza is arguably the greatest hitting catcher of all time. And, you just wonder what separates one from the other. Obviously, you have the issue with the steroids. And, I thought a couple of the guys at the bottom of the list were almost as interesting as some of the guys at the top of the list. I mean, I was disappointed, although it was expected that Don Mattingly would not get in his last chance at the Hall through the writers. You know, Donnie had an incredible career here in New York. Great guy, now managing out in L.A. And you know, his downfall was longevity, and then he stayed a few years after he was severely injured, and his numbers tailed off. So strictly on numbers, you know, a lot of people don't vote for him, but just a tremendous leader and a fantastic player. Carlos Delgado, who finished his career here with the Mets, didn't even get enough, I think, to be on the ballot next year. And here's a gentleman who hit well over 450 home runs and just incredible numbers. Possibly, you know, some allegations, but I, you know, again, nothing's ever really come out about it. You're dealing with everybody during the steroid era, and what if, you know, who could be on a list, who was on a list? Should that be taken into account? Should it be taken into account and discounted? Those are decisions, you know, that that are difficult to make. I'm not always sure the writers get that right, but I'm not going to pick a fight with the media, especially not on this show, right? Right?
Yes. No, we don't want any of that.
No controversy.
But you know, the New York fans here are struggling with, you know, the Knicks and the Nets and the Jets and the Giants. Everyone's been struggling. It's been a rough season for everyone. Do you think
there's
any hope?
Hey, and hockey.
The Rangers.
Could be New York. Rangers and Islanders are both doing great. So yeah, maybe we'll get
well,
back to some great hockey rivalries.
Do you think the baseball fans are going to have some reprieve this summer? Do you think the Mets and the Yankees are going to be struggling as well?
You know, I'm an eternal optimist. Come spring, I always have hope that they're both going to do great, and been lucky enough to work with you know, large numbers of Yankees and Mets on both sides of the of town. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. The Mets are still looking for a bat or two, I think, and hoping that the young pitchers are both healthy and continue the progression. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more out of them this offseason. I mean, I think they made a good acquisition, picking up an outfielder, but at the same time, they're definitely a bat or two shy unless they're going to count on everybody having either a bounce-back season, for example, in the case of Wright, or in a situation where they're looking for some young players to continue their the successes that they had, a Duda, for example, or Darnell, and whether those guys are going to progress or whether they're going to be able to keep it up. That's a big question mark. I know that there's a lot of other teams in the league that seem to be adding veteran bats, and the Mets chose not to through free agency or through trades. They're standing pat, and they've got a very interesting team. I mean, I'm very interested to see what Collins is going to do with them and whether he can continue to nurture the young players. Always been a Flores fan, the shortstop, but again, I'm not sure that he has enough range, and it's kind of dangerous to have him and Murph in the middle. Not a great defensive combination there, and you're trying to rely on pitching, so that's always a potential problem. With regard to the Yankees, one never knows. You know, they've managed to go 20-something years with predominantly older players, and they're going to be retooling this year. But on the other hand, they've got a star-studded lineup that it wouldn't surprise me that you know, they could win 90-95 games and be right in the middle of it. It's all going to come down to the pitching on that side. They got some better than expected pitching last year from a lot of guys that they didn't know that they were going to be useful, and you know, the catching lightning in the bottle, for example, a guy like McCarthy, who they don't have anymore, or some of the younger pitchers came up and did well and they used in trades. So you come back to, you lose Kuroda, you got CeCe, what does he have left? Hopefully he's healthy. If he's healthy, he should be fine. Tanaka, again, if he's healthy, he should be fine. Pineda, if he's healthy, hopefully he'll work off of the successes he had last year. Mm-hmm. But that's a lot of question marks on an older team to be going into the season with. I do think Beltran, McCann, and some of the guys who were injured last year will have better years than they did last year, but whether that's enough to make them a playoff contender when a lot of the other teams have improved, Red Sox have improved, Toronto's improved, we'll see.
Yes, it will be very, very interesting to see what goes on there. And you know, we're running out of time here, so I'm going to give you one last question. You know, you said you're a Michigan fan, and, you know, you guys had some very exciting news last week with Harbaugh coming in as the new coach. What do you think he'll be able to do for the program?
I think it was a great coup that they were able to bring Jim home. When I was out at Michigan, Jim was my quarterback. When I was a freshman and sophomore over there, he was leading Michigan under Bo Schembechler, our legendary coach. So I'm very excited that they were able to bring back such a great coach with a Michigan history. It's extremely rare, if not unprecedented, that to have a pro coach with three trips to the championship game in 4 years be made available, or to be willing to take a job at the college level, and just to have him back. And Jim Hackett, the interim athletic director over there, did a tremendous job in staying focused and working to ensure that Jim was able to come back and to convince him, I don't know if that he needed convincing, but to get him to come back. Michigan was without a coach for the last month or so, which when a lot of other teams were adding personnel, recruits and everything. So I'm very excited about it. I think it changes the whole dynamic of the program. I think a lot of the kids are going to want to come out there. I think a lot of the fans and the alumni are going to be energized, and you know, they've got some talent out there, and I'm sure they're going to get some more. And they're a very young team, but having a guy of Harbaugh's stature, especially an alumni, come back and do it, you know, do it on his hometown in front of his college fellow alumni. I think that's going to be a great opportunity. I'm very excited about it.
Yeah, Harbaugh, I will say, you know, watching him at Stanford and then obviously being a Niners fan, I have my utmost respect for him. I think he can do a great job.
How did you guys let him go? I mean, he was very happy out there. He made it, you know, Gina, he made it very well known that he was not happy that the 49ers, after 3 years of, you know, making it to the championship and including making it to the Super Bowl against his brother, he did not want to leave. And you guys, 49er organization, pushed him out last year by trying to trade him. And
yep.
This year it was a very open secret that he would not be returning and was not welcome to come back, despite the winning, despite, you know, the support he had from the players and everything. And
well,
very open feud he had with the family and with his general manager. So I was
that's a story of 49ers, you know, fans' lives. The front office, they're controlling everything, and you know, if you don't get along with them and play it the way they want, they don't want you around. So, but I do wish him the best of luck.
And he's got his work cut out for him. It's the Big Ten. You know, you got Ohio State in the championship game. You had a Wisconsin team, both Ohio State and Wisconsin beat SEC powerhouses. You know, it's not Michigan State had a huge come from behind victory over Baylor, ranked fifth in the country. I mean, you have a tough conference, but I just think, you know, again, it's great for college football to have somebody of his stature back, and I think the NFL will be a little bit poorer for not having him at the NFL level. So looking forward to seeing how this plays out. It's great for Michigan, great for the Big Ten, and great for college football, which I'm a huge fan of, and I think that's good for sports in general.
Go Big Blue.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Cabot, thank you so much for joining us today. It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you both.
Be sure to follow Cabot on Twitter at Cabot, CABOT NYC. And thank you all for tuning in. Have a good weekend.